So, good evening, everyone. Wonderful to see you. See each of you, to see all of you. It's very cold here. It's also a holiday, so it's been kind of a quiet, cold day. I mean, a holiday. It's the end, marks the end of the Great War. So, it's a day when people don't work and stay home. Schools are closed. It's not like a day of making merriment, but and it feels very much like winter is coming. I learned yesterday, I think it was, that my Zumi Roshi's last living brother died. I think it was his last living brother, Junyo, so some of you have heard of or seen. I think he died the day before yesterday. He was 82 years old, had apparently been ailing, I don't know, but he was very important for our white plum lineage because he helped my Zumi Roshi a lot at ZCLA in Los Angeles to establish the rituals and train people. And then after, and just supporting his brother. And then after my Zumi Roshi died, he was very present for my Zumi Roshi's successors and successors of his successors in the West, helping them continue and being a liaison with Japan for them. He was particularly important for Tenke Roshi, and who has Zen River, the Zen River Center in Holland. And they were very close and they worked very closely together. And so it was Tenke-esque actually who informed us that Junyo had died. But today he shared, I guess, his temple in Japan had shared with Tenke Junyo's what we call death poem or last words, they say, last things that he wrote. And I thought it was interesting. It's an interesting thing that Japanese Zen masters do of writing a death poem, which I guess leads you to believe that they're aware that they're going to die and that they have enough awareness to be able to write a poem before they die. So I always find that I have a whole book actually someone gave me of Japanese death poems that I just noticed on my bookshelf the other day, which I should look at. But so his poem, it's not very long, so I'll read it to you. 82 years, some were good, some were bad. Like this, like a dream, this life, so full of richness. The Dharmakaya never dies. The true man lives forever. And then it's signed, Kirigaya Junyo, a ragged Zen monk. So, it doesn't sound sad at all. Um, 82 years, some were good, some were bad. And then he adds with exclamation points, like this. This is translated from Japanese, and the guy who sent it, I think his successor, told Tenke that it It's kind of an approximate translation, but you know, probably something like just this, or he said like this, but it might have, I would assume that it was more just this, but who knows. Like a dream, this life so full of richness. And again, there's exclamation point. The Dharmakaya never dies. That's the embodied Dharma. The true man lives forever. So what is this true man? Sometimes we say true man of no rank. Miguel, actually, that's his Dharma name. Sometimes we say original face. That's also Lara's Dharma name. We could say Mu, maybe. I have a lot of different ways of saying this. He says, the true man lives forever. And this is someone who is about to die, who's writing that. And he signs it as Ragged Zen Monk. And yet he was a Roshi. He was head of his temple. He traveled all over. He had, you know, some difficulties in his life. He had a terrible accident, and so his hands were deformed. And yet he said, like a dream, this life so full of richness. Some years were good, some were bad. Just this, just this. Can we truly say that? Wow. I don't know. And in my email thread this morning as well, I saw this. There was a promotional offer for a mindfulness course, an online mindfulness course. It's offered in America. And it said in the description, it said, we don't teach someone else's mindfulness, someone else's voice. We help you find your mindfulness in your life. And I have never seen mindfulness presented like that before. And suddenly it made so much sense. I thought, well, of course. Who else, how could you have someone else's mindfulness? You can only be mindful in your life. And some of it's good, some of it's not. However, when we are mindful, in my mindfulness, your mindfulness, then you appreciate the richness. And you can appreciate the true man lives forever. But you have to find your mindfulness. Now, I don't know if this course, how they teach any differently than any other mindfulness course. I have never followed a mindfulness course. I know people who teach it, and I know procedures. I know people who have done it, so I'm familiar with it, but I don't know what makes this course different. But it was so intriguing that I thought, oh, maybe I'll sign up for that course. I won't, but you know, would have been interesting to see how they teach you to find your mindfulness. And I connect the two because they're not the way that I hear it and the way that I read it. It's not different. Experiencing the true man, the true woman, Mu, the way that I read it is that's finding your mindfulness. And, you know, that essence, like we were saying last week about the lotus and the mud, you know, it's like a little seed contains the essence of the big tree that it will become. The tiny little grain contains the beautiful rose, has the essence of the beautiful rose that will blossom. And from that seed, if we cultivate it and we give it water and sunlight and the proper soil, will bloom, and just like we will. You know, we like the seed, we too, we contain that, we have that seed of our true essence, which is our awakened nature. And if we cultivate it, that it too will blossom. We don't know how, when, where, what it will look like. I just saw this headline today, this little thing in the Guardian newspaper that someone had visited George Orwell's house somewhere in England. I think in England. Yeah. And the roses that he planted, you know, probably 70, 80 years ago, maybe, are still blooming. Which is fascinating to think, you know. The seeds we plant, we have no idea what they will become. And so we have this seed in us, and then when that seed blossoms, when we realize our true nature, the true man, the true woman, original face, we don't know then how that will blossom. And what seeds that will plant elsewhere, in someone else's heart. Because everyone, all beings, have what we say Buddha nature, that luminous essence of the awakened heart, the awakened mind. And it sounds to me like Junyo in his poem is pointing to that, you know? Just this. So, and often we get lost, we lose sight of that essence, or we don't see it because it's covered up with clouds, like the sun is covered up with clouds. Just because we don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And the same is true of our true nature. It becomes clouded over with our attachments, our afflictions, our likes and dislikes. And that prevents us from seeing this life like a dream so full of richness. prevents us from connecting with this seed, this essence. And that's where this mindfulness thing is interesting, because, you know, mindfulness is at once a technique that we use so that we can stabilize our mind, make it clear, so that we can connect with our true nature. So it's a means to an end. But the way that it was presented in this today that I read was that it's not a means to an end. It's the end, in the sense of it's your mindfulness. Your awakeness. It's not a technique. It's what it sounded like to me. But maybe I'm reading too much into that. So, you know, it takes the forms of, like today, I was supposed to have an interview with Doku-san with someone this afternoon. And I was sitting here at my computer working away, and my phone, I got a text message on my phone. It's the person saying, I hope everything's okay. I thought we were supposed to have an interview 15 minutes ago. And I suddenly realized the time. And I said, oh, okay, sorry, I'm connecting right now. Sometimes we are distracted. And which is like with the technique of counting your breath. So you count your breath and then you lose track of the count and you go away. And when you realize that you've been away, you come back. So when I realized that I had been away, fortunately he messaged me and I realized it. When I realized that, I didn't beat myself up and say I was horrible and what a stupid thing that was and apologize profusely. You know, I said, oh, sorry, I lost track of time. I'm signing in now. And then we moved on. If I had added on to that, self-criticism, beating myself up, you know, blaming the other person for who knows what, but often we do that, you know. We feel bad about something we did, and then we blame the other person. And then we're still distracted. We're still not back then, if we do that. So fortunately, I was able to just come back and be here now. Just this. Sometimes I'm on time, sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I'm distracted, sometimes I'm not. Just this. I don't know if I will be able to say that when I'm, you know, 82 years old and about to die. We should all be so lucky to live to 82, right? No? But I like to think that, my experience is that returning again and again to just this moment, like we do in our practice, and letting the attachments fall away, makes it much easier to just stay with what is, no matter what it is, as we discover in our practice, as we discover in our sitting, even if you're not aware of it, if you really look, you will see that that's probably what's happening. You're becoming more comfortable with things as they are. until you're not. And then you drift off, and then you come back again. Everything moves. You know, like we were saying last week, shift happens. Everything moves. Even that. So, you know, in a sense, we're all sitting here tonight because of this man who died 2 days ago. So it seemed appropriate to honor him by reading his poem and talking a little bit about him. I didn't know him well. I only saw him on a couple of occasions, and usually it was big gatherings, and so I didn't really speak with him, but I know what we owe him. So I'm happy to share that with you. So, anyone like to share something, say anything? Questions, comments? Joa?
Yeah, I didn't know about Junio Roshi, and it makes me sad. I met him in 1999, and I saw him last in 2017. And just before the pandemic, I was trying to organize a trip to Japan to visit him, actually. Well, time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. So that's on a very personal level, I'm sad. And he was very kind. The few interactions I had with him, and was really, there was a lot of joy from him, coming out from him. He was kind of always laughing. It seemed that he was always laughing. I am very moved and inspired each time I read in texts anything about joy, that joy is so much part of the practice, or is a quality that is, that manifests itself on this path. And he was really just, and the poem that you mentioned was really, there's something light about it, lighthearted, almost joyful. And it's true that he, just Maizumi Roshi, died at such an early age, and he really continued that work, and helped this lineage get really grounded in Europe, so and in the States. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you. Jan?
Yeah. First of all, I was... when I start this evening, I felt such a gratitude for having you all on the online now. And it's also because Now you mentioned the brother of Mayazumi, and I feel we owe a lot of gratitude to all these people. And when you mentioned about the mindfulness, I was thinking about the saying, when you see a Buddha on your way, kill him. So it's only about yourself and that, on what it, that might be. But it's not the truth of another that you believe in or. Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you. Credit.
It's like when we are in the retreat. And we will have this this meal, and this there was 1,000 people. I forget exactly what we say, but the food we eat come from a lot of people who made it, like in a retreat, and actually this. This person, he was one of the 1,000 things that were made so we could, we can eat this beautiful, beautiful meal.
Yeah, we chant 72 laborers brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. Yeah. And actually 72 is just a random number. It probably means something in some Buddhist context, but the labors are numberless. And yet we can recognize individual ones when we realize them.
I'd like to share my experience during, it seems so, I actually feel grateful for, because I had to get off, go off screen for a couple of minutes. I was here all the time, I was just not on screen. Because I had to get a taxi for my kids to get them home. Then making sure that they were in the taxi on their way here. And it was so beautiful because I was, as much as I could, I was also paying attention to what you were saying, but then at some point I really had to, I called him, so I was doing that because it was just what needed to be done. It was, and it seemed so much in accord with what you were saying. This is, it was. It was this, and I stopped paying attention to what you were saying because I had to do something else. And then, when it was possible, I I came back. So it was a beautiful experience for me. Thank you.
Yeah, because it's often we have the experience of we would prefer to be doing something else, or we feel frustrated because we want to do something, but we can't because there's something else that we have to do. So you, it could have been that you would have been frustrated. You had to deal with the taxi and you wanted to be sitting here listening. Or the opposite, you really prefer to be dealing with the taxi and not listening. You know, so there could have been some struggle going on, because often that's what, not in this precise case, but you know, often we have struggles like that. And it's almost like such a relief when we don't have those struggles. When we just, this is what I need to do right now. And it's not any more or less important than the other thing. Everything's important, right? So we can give our full attention to whatever it is. Just this, as he says. He says, like this, but. Yeah. And often when we have those struggles, it's because of an attachment that we have to ourselves. And how we want things to be, or we don't want things to be, or we want to obtain something or accomplish something. Or we don't want to do something. Like, I don't want to do something. I doesn't want to do something.
Yeah.
So
I want only to say that I feel also gratitude that you tell us this about this person, about his life, because he stay in our minds after that, and he leave it continue to live in ourselves, this story. And thank you to tell you and Joa to give us this experience.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we can expand our consciousness or our panoramic awareness to include everyone. So everyone is connected. Everything is connected. So it's all living right now in us. You know, as we, I think it was last week when we were saying that. Or was it? No, maybe it was during the weekend when we were saying about that. You know, we are our parents. We are our ancestors as well. You know, we just physically, scientifically, there's a part of their body that is in us. But if we can, you know, expand our consciousness and not even limit it to just direct family, all the people that Junyu influenced or had some effect on their life are then having an effect on other people's lives. So, you know, probably Junyu, he didn't even know that Wildflower exists. He definitely knew Gena Roshi, and he probably realized she had successors, but he didn't know me personally, and he probably had no idea that this exists, and he had no idea that any of this. And yet, he's totally a part of it. And we had, I have no idea what his temple or anything like that is in Japan, but we're part of it. And we're also part of the flowers and the trees and the cats and the dogs and the air and the moon and the sun. We're all part of it. We are all of it. I think we were saying that last week, right? We are all of it. So we can really expand this to, it helps to have a realization like this where, oh yeah, I can see what effect he had. And we are sitting here tonight because he did what he did to some extent. That helps. That helps us to give it kind of a human scale, something that our mind can grasp. But actually, it's much faster than that. And defies all sense of logic and trying to draw, you know, a tree, a family tree or something. It's beyond that. So in that sense, we can be grateful not only for him, but we can be grateful for his family, we can be grateful for his students, we can be grateful for the internet provider that allowed his poem to be sent to me and that allows us to be sitting here tonight. We can be grateful to Zoom for developing this technology. It's endless. It's endless. Marlon, great to see you.
You're muted, Marlon. You have to unmute yourself.
Tens que ligar o som.
Now? Well, it's my first time with you in Zoom with this room Zendo. And it's really a different, strange thing for me. Yeah, but as you were saying, well, it's really a different thing. And I was a kind of, I'm not going to say a word today, but yeah, it's the same. And when you talk about everything is connected and we are in connection with those people we even don't know, and you talk about cats that we have, and when you talk about animals, my dogs start barking. And I think, yeah, it's the same thing to be here or in our real lives of each one of us. And I'm very pleased to be back with you. Thank you.
Thank you. We're very pleased to see you too. Where are you? Are you in Carvalhinho? Or?
No, my mother's house of the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Great. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just, because Marlene is here, I'm thinking of, Marlene has this beautiful little Zendo on her property where we did a retreat once. And it's, she has olive trees and a beautiful garden, Mediterranean type garden. And wonderful place and cats and dogs and yet it's, and it was beautiful to be there, and yet it's beautiful to be here too, so it's great, it's really nice. Well, if that's, if no one has anything to add, I think that's a good place to stop. No one has anything? If not, then we will do the four vows. So João is now the host again, is that? Yeah, okay.